Osho, Hari Om Tat Sat, the divine sound, that is the truth. Talks given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 21.
Beloved Bhagwan, the other night I heard you say that you are as irrelevant as existence. However, as far as I am concerned, you are totally relevant and essential. Are we in contradiction with each other?
I am in absolute agreement with you. Do you see the contradiction? Logic has interpreted that which is complementary as contradictory. And logic rules our education, our minds. Whenever we see two things complementary, immediately the idea of contradiction arises. Otherwise, in one existence, interrelated, how can there be contradiction? Complementariness is essential. For example, the day and night are not contradictory. They are complementary to each other. Neither life and death are contradictory. They are complementary to each other. They make one whole, one circle, complete and entire. But looked through the eyes of logic, it is hard to believe that life and death are not contradictory. It seems obvious that death is the end of life. That is not true. Death is only a beginning of a new life. A refreshment, a rejuvenation. The old body is tired. You need more experiences to become mature. You have to move through many other forms of life. And there are millions of forms of life. Moving through all these forms of life, learning by and by, step by step, inch by inch, you arrive at humanity. Humanity gives you a new opportunity of transformation. To jump out of the circle of life and death and to become part of the eternal. Those who achieve it have really lived. Those who have missed may have to learn again the old route. Who knows how many lives, to recognize that humanity is a point of departure, not only from death, but also from life, life as you know it, to a new immortality, to a life which can be equivalent to godliness. Logic has created many misunderstandings. It goes on insisting on the duality of things without seeing the interconnecting link. I am reminded of one incident. Mahatma Gandhi and Muhammad Ali Jinnah both were fighting for the freedom of India. There was only one difference between them. That was, Muhammad Ali Jinnah wanted Pakistan as a separate country only for Mohammedans, a Muslim state. And Gandhi wanted the whole India to remain one and big and vast. They fought continuously and on their agreement British Empire depended. Unless they agree, the British Empire went on saying, you are not agreement in yourself, and we don't want to leave the country in a chaos. If we leave it in a chaos without any decisive guidelines, there will be tremendous massacre, and the whole responsibility will be ours. This was their politics. Jinnah was very stubborn. Finally, seeing the situation that either you have to remain a slave or you have to divide the country, Gandhi agreed for the division. India became two countries. What I want to point is that they both have become so much attached in fighting with each other, almost intimate friends. Jinnah felt in Karachi, the capital of those days, Pakistan, very lonely. Without Gandhi, he lost all interest. And here in New Delhi, Gandhi used to say that he is going to live 125 years. Dropped the idea and said, I want to die as soon as possible. There is no joy. On the surface, logic will say these two persons were contradictions to each other, enemies to each other. But deep down there seems to be an intimacy. Jinnah was the head of his government in Pakistan. Gandhi was nobody. His disciples were running the government. Just after 1 year, he was sought by Hindu, which no one could have ever thought. It was possible that he may be sought by a Mohammedan, but he was sought by a Hindu. Life has its own way. Strange it looks, but deep down there is a certain connectiveness. Gandhi being alive, Hindus in India will not be the only power, because there were Mohammedans, there were Jews, there were Christians, there were Jainas, there were Buddhists, And Gandhi wanted to make an absolutely secular state. Jinnah did a good job. He finished almost all the Hindus in Pakistan and made a Mohammedan state, a religious state. Gandhi could not do that. And if Gandhi is alive, then he will prevent anything on those lines. And the strangest thing is that India has the greatest Mohammedan population in the whole world. No other country has, even today, after the division of Pakistan on one side, Bangladesh on another side, India has the biggest Mohammedan population. It is the biggest Mohammedan nation. So the fear of the Hindus was that soon these Mohammedans, which produce children more efficiently, and are allowed by the constitution to have religious freedom, and each Mohammedan can marry 4 women, soon they will be the majority in the country. Again, Hindus will be living under Mohammedan rule. Gandhi had to be removed. And the moment the news reached all over India that Gandhi has been sought, everybody without any exception thought that he must be killed by a Mohammedan. I told my father that I don't think, because Mohammedans have achieved what they wanted. They wanted a separate country. They have got the separate country. Whatever their demands were, had been fulfilled. Why they should kill Mahatma Gandhi, who is not in their way at all? He is certainly killed by a Hindu. And unfortunately, that Hindu belonged to Pune. But the day Gandhi was killed and news reached Karachi, up to that whole year, Muhammad Ali Jinnah was not having guards, security, because he could not think that any Mohammedan can kill him. He has given them a whole country which does not belong to them. He was sitting in the garden talking to his secretary when the news came on the radio that Gandhi has been assassinated by a Hindu. Suddenly, Muhammad Ali stood up, and the secretary has to support him because he was staggering. He was so much shocked by the very idea, a Hindu killing Mahatma Gandhi. Then what? Is possible became clear to him. He can also be killed by a Mohammedan. And actually he was killed by Mohammedans, but in a way so slowly that it does not look like assassination. He was old and sick, and since Mahatma Gandhi died, he never left his bed. Everybody asked that you should be happy that Gandhi is dead. He said, I feel very hollow without him. He was my joy. We were party to a game. Now I am alone. Now there is nobody with whom I can play the old game. Now there is nobody who is exactly my contemporary. My only contemporary was Mahatma Gandhi. He is dead. And he became sick. And to his closest disciple, Liaquat Ali Khan, he gave the country as acting head because he was not able to work. And what Liaquat Ali Khan did, just now the doctor who looked after Muhammad Ali Jinnah, his diary has been published. Liaquat Ali removed Muhammad Ali Jinnah to a remote part of Pakistan where no medicine, no hospital. If you ask for any medicine, it will take 3 weeks to reach. No railway lines, no airport, nothing. In the name that climate will suit him. And now he was in power. And only the doctor was given to him, not even a nurse, a servant to look after him. And the doctor's remembrance is that it was a political murder done in a very diplomatic way. There will come 3 weeks when there is no medicine, and he will go on giving information that medicine is absolutely immediate. And after 3 weeks, the immediate medicine will arise. My own feeling is also that Jinnah was killed. And the doctor reports in his book that to me Jinnah confided a strange secret that I have committed a mistake by dividing India and Pakistan. This is a very strange thing. His whole life he fought for Pakistan. And at the end he says that I committed a great mistake and now there is no going back. I am too old. And Gandhi is not alive. If I had a little health left, I would have flown to New Delhi to Jawaharlal and said to him that drop this idea of two countries. It is foolish. But to Gandhi he could never agree. Were they enemies or complementaries? Ordinary historian will say they were enemies. They were not. Jinnah has immense respect for Gandhi. And so was the case with Gandhi. Agreement or non-agreement on political matters was a different affair. But love for each other was a totally different thing. You will not believe that Gandhi had offered Jinnah that I will make you the first Prime Minister of India, but let the India remain undivided. And you can choose your cabinet, I will not interfere. And I will withdraw Jawaharlal and others who are contenders. They are my people, I can say to them, withdraw. Let Jinnah have his government. I trust you that country will not suffer with your hands, will prosper with your hands. Your intelligence, your caliber, your character, everything makes it viable that you should be the first Prime Minister of the whole country. Why be of a small section of the country the head when I am offering you the whole continent of India? But Jinnah refused. He said, I never accept anything. I fight for it, and I win for it. Your idea is good, but it is your idea. They fought their whole life, and both suffered. Gandhi was continuously inquiring about Muhammad Ali Jinnah's health. How he is. Is he still the same warrior? The same sharp intelligence, and the same was true on the other side. I'm just giving you an example from human reality. When your enemy dies, something in you dies too. You are no more the same. The enemy was also part of your being. You may not have thought about it in that way, that he was complementary to you. On a wider scale, the whole existence is complementary. But Aristotle, who created Western logic, could not understand this complementariness. He is thought to be the father of logic. He is not even the uncle. Because his whole logic by and by is proving wrong. In the East, we have a totally different logical approach. It is in tune with life. Those who are not accustomed of it will say it is contradictory, it is inconsistent. But those who can understand, they can see the underlying connectedness. One morning a man asked Gautam Buddha, "Do you believe in God?" And Buddha said, "God? God does not exist. The question of belief does not arise." And he said so strongly, and in the afternoon another man came and he asked, "Does God exist?" And he said, "Yes, absolutely yes. Without God, life will be just dead, unconscious. God is the intelligence of existence." And in the evening another man came And he said that I don't know from where to begin. I am not a thinker. I don't know whether God exists or does not exist. I have not taken yet a partisan view. Would you help me to see the reality? And Gautama Buddha, listening to him, did not answer, closed his eyes and went into deep meditation. The man seeing the beauty and the grace of a Buddha meditating, himself fell. You know that kind of experience. If you are sitting with few people and one man goes on yawning, soon you start feeling sleepy also. We are not islands, we are connected. So things enter into each other. And a man of the quality of Buddha, with such tremendous silence, created the atmosphere that the man fell into that silence. He also closed his eyes. After 1 hour, Buddha shook him and asked him, "Have you received the answer?" The man touched Gautama Buddha's feet and he said, "I am grateful. There is no question and there is no answer. There is only pure silence in the inner being of man, and that silence goes on spreading into the innermost core of the universe. But there is no question, no answer. Life is very innocent. I am grateful that you showed me the way." Ananda, who Gautama Buddha's remained always by his side to take care of him, he was very much puzzled, because he has heard all three questions. In one, God does not exist. In one, God exists. In another, the question does not arise. When everybody had left, Ananda asked Gautama Buddha that, "Don't disturb my sleep. I will not be able to sleep with such kind of contradictory answers. One expects you to be consistent. If you say yes, then go on saying yes. If you say no, then that is your answer. But what kind of answer is this?" Buddha said, "Ananda, I have told you many times that those were not your questions and I was not answering you. Ananda said, I know, I have also heard you saying me all kinds of things. But one thing is certain, I have ears and they hear. I cannot close my ears when you are answering somebody. I have heard all the three answers. And they are all contradictory. Gautama Buddha said, just for your sleep's sake, I would like to say to you, the first man who had come to me was an atheist, confirmed atheist, well-known atheist. He wanted me to say something that supports him. He was not a seeker. He was not really in a quest. I had to shatter his ego. And the same was the case with the other man. He had come with a prejudice and he wanted to be supported in his prejudice. And that will be very unkindly to support anybody's prejudice. I destroyed his prejudice. You simply answered, heard those answers. You did not see what was the undercurrent. The undercurrent was the same, to destroy the prejudice, to destroy the belief, and to bring those people to real, authentic experience. That's why I did not answer the third man, because he had no prejudice. He was so innocent that to tell him something would have been a crime. So all that I could do, I went into meditation, and around me, in the deep silence of the night, and he was an innocent man, he also fell into silence. He experienced for the first time his own inner peace, no question, no answer. And he was grateful. He touched my feet that I have solved his trouble. The work of a master is very complex because he is working with so many people of different prejudices, different conditionings, and he has to settle them all and to make them absolutely clean. Just as they were born, knowing nothing, but that knowing nothing was such a beautiful flower in a child. It filled him with wonder. Knowledge kills wonder. Not knowing fills you with mysterious experience. When the child opens his eyes and hears the birds and the sun rays and the trees and the greenery and so many colors, he cannot describe, he does not know even the names. But he lives almost in paradise. In his innocence is paradise. Milarepa my effort here is to make you as innocent as a child. No belief system I'm teaching. So the question of contradiction does not arise. No philosophy is my preaching, so contradiction does not arise. My effort is to demolish all the rubbish that you have collected down the ages. If I can remove all that rubbish from your mind and can give you a clean sky, my work is done. Without knowing, you will know the mystery, the mysterious. The poetry of life, the music and the dance, all will become available to you. A truck driver is racing down the freeway at 70 miles per hour when suddenly a face appears level with his left hand cab window. The driver leans over and sees that a man is standing on the saddle of his motorbike, steering with one foot on the handlebar. Truck driver rolls down his window and the biker holds up a cigarette and says, "Have you got a light?" I have, says the driver, holding out his lighter, but you had better be careful or you will kill yourself. No, I won't, replies the biker. I only smoke 3 a day. Logic is not the way to life. It leads away. The path that leads to life consists of a clarity, just like that of a mirror. It reflects everything but holds to nothing. Aristotle, although is considered to be the father of Western logic, was not much of a logician. He has written in his books that women have less teeth than men, and he had 2 wives. Any night he could have counted the wife's teeth. But no, in Greece it was just as in other lands, a prejudice against women, that they must have something lesser than men. They cannot be first-class citizens on any ground, even on teeth. This man gave many ideas which worked up to a point and then flopped, because they were not coming from an enlightened being. They were not coming from a deep meditation. They were just superficial thinking. Today, there has come into existence a new logic, non-Aristotelian logic. following logic, Euclid has made his geometry. Now, because the father figure is falling, Euclid has been losing ground every day. There has come in existence a non-Euclidean geometry. You can enforce on small children stupid ideas. For example, that 2 parallel lines never meet. But nobody asks, can you draw 2 parallel lines exactly parallel? It is impossible. Whatever you create is going to meet maybe miles away, but parallel lines meet, because parallel lines are created by human beings who cannot do anything with absolute perfection. Euclid goes on saying that the definition of a line is that it has length only, length but can you draw a line which has only length, however thin? It will have something more than length. He defines a point which has no length, no breadth. Can you make a point? Howsoever small it is. Now every concept of Euclid is being questioned. And Euclid is only a logical extension of Aristotle. Aristotle is not a sage. He is simply a thinker. And a thinker cannot come to conclusions which can be true. Only to appearance. Only the sage can see the reality as it is. It is Aristotle who divided the world into 2, the material and the spiritual. And it is such a coincidence, interesting coincidence, that the spiritual world is called metaphysical. And the reason is only that in his book he has chapters. After the chapter of physics comes the chapter, he does not call it metaphysics, he simply calls it that there are things which are not confined to the physical world. But because the chapter comes after physics, meta means after. Metaphysics means after physics. It has taken a strange meaning. But existence is one. You may divide it arbitrarily for certain purposes, but never for a moment forget that your division is arbitrary. Existence is one solid whole. Matter is nothing but spirit condensed, spirit is matter which has come to blossom. The difference between the seed and the flower, it is not the difference, because the seed contains the flower and the flower contains many seeds. So it is a circle. It is not division. All divisionary ideas are dangerous. East also has grown its own logic, but it is not Aristotelian. Buddha's logic is fourfold logic. If you ask him, is there God? He may say, perhaps. But perhaps is not an answer. If you ask, is there any doubt? He will say, perhaps. Are you not certain? He will say, perhaps. Mahavira extended the idea of perhaps to the very extreme. It is sevenfold. It is one of the most complicated ideas, but very representative of reality. Because he says, whatever you say contains only one aspect of reality. What about other aspects? You have to make other statements. According to him, unless you make 7 statements, you will not be able to cover the whole reality. But those 7 statements are going to be contradictory to each other. Ask him, God, what about God? And he says, God is. And immediately says, God is not. And follows that God is both, is not. And continues, God is both not, neither is nor is not. And finalizes that God is indefinable. Mahavira could not gather many followers for the simple reason. Only very crazy people will accept such a thing. People want definite answers, but existence is a flux. It is not definite. It is changing. It is moving. It has all aspects possible. In some way you can say, yes, it is true. And some way you can say, it is not true. In a court, a man was on the witness stand. There has been a murder. Another witness has said that the murder has happened inside the house. And this witness said the murder happened under the open sky. The judge was a little puzzled. Both men were of trustworthy integrity. Then his clerk told him, don't be puzzled. Both are right. The house was being built, but the roof was not put on it. So the murder happened in the house, but it happened under the open sky. If you watch life, you will find so many things which logically don't fit, but that simply means you have not gone deep enough. Otherwise, they have to fit. They are part of this existence. Paddy is called as the prime witness in an assault case, but gets things a little mixed up in his account of the affair. It was Dennis who started it all. "Your Honor," begins Paddy, "he trod on my foot, so I pushed him off and smacked him on the jaw. Just then his dog ran up and I hit him again." "Hit the dog?" asked the judge. "No, Your Honor, I hit Dennis. Then I picked up a stone and threw it at him, and it rolled him over and over." "Threw a stone at Dennis?" asked the judge. "At the dog, Your Honor. Then he got up and hit me again." The dog? Asked the judge. "No, Dennis." And with that he stuck his tail between his legs and ran off. "Dennis?" asked the judge. "No, the dog," says Paddy. "And when he came back at me, he got me down and pounded me, Your Honor." "The dog came back at you?" asked the judge. "No, Dennis, Your Honor." "And he was not hurt at all?" "Who was not hurt?" asked the judge. "The dog, Your Honor," says Paddy. The judge scratches his head and fines the dog $10. After an unfruitful evening, at the village dance, Ned begins his long, lonely walk back to the farmhouse. When he is halfway home, the rounded, moonlit shapes of the big pumpkins in the fields remind the horny young fellow of so many sickly female asses settling down next to one of the pumpkins. He cuts a hole in the side and begins to get physical with it. Suddenly a voice cries out, "Hey, you, what the hell are you doing with that pumpkin?" Ned bolts upright, sees the policeman's badge clinging in the moonlight, and thinking quickly, blurts out, "Pumpkin? What pumpkin? Ah, Christ! Is it midnight already?" Freddy decides to try life in the army and gets sent to a training camp. One night, he comes back from an exercise covered in cow shit. "Why are you late back in camp?" snaps the sergeant major. "Sorry, sir," says Paddy, "but as we cross that field full of cows, my hat blew off and I had to try on 30 before I found it again."
Yes, Papa.
Thank you. Thank you.